Hi, Laura. How are you? It's Diane.
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. You're the first one.
I figured as much since I said my call hadn't started yet. I thought, well, better early than late.
There you go.
But seeing as how it's 7 o'clock on the button right now, I'm really like exactly on time. Not
Well,
even 5 minutes soon.
I'm impressed that, any mom who can be on time for a meeting at 7 o'clock at night, if it's impressive in my book.
Yes. Oh, that's right. It is 7 o'clock. It's 8 o'clock your time. Yes.
Yeah,
It's always
exactly.
hard. Well, Zachary doesn't have school tomorrow, so it's even easier because I don't have to
Oh,
worry
wow.
about homework or anything else. So that's kind of nice. I have school, but he's off. So it's nice for him. I'm still stuff ready. Still stuff ready.
Cool. Well, it's good to have a little bit different schedule.
Exactly. I'm sure he'll be happy to be here without me.
That's
She's like,
true.
oh, be alone, Mom. Yeah. You know what? I'll tell you before everyone else joins. We worked out a new thing with him on Wednesday where he could leave school after school and walk about 20 minutes away to the Panera. It's about 6 blocks, but they're big, long blocks. And he could order himself something to eat and do his homework and then get over to the mall to pick up his new shoes that were already ordered and then go to the bookstore. And he'd go all and he'd mammy his money. And it was really, he had a really good time. He's like, I'd like to do that every Wednesday, Mom. And I said, well, we can talk about it. And he had it all
That's
planned out and we talked
awesome.
about what he would order and everything. So it was kind of fun.
Wow.
Oh.
What was the biggest success in that for you?
He really did all of it, that he was exactly where he said he was going to be, that he didn't get lost somewhere around the road and like stop thinking about the time or stop thinking about, that he had to call me. Like he called me before he left. He called me when he got there. He called me when he finished eating and started his homework. He called me before he walked to the shoe store. He called me when he went to the bookstore. So, he just was really on top of it. Like you could tell he really wanted privilege. And so it was really exciting. So it was fun for him. He liked it. I think he just liked, because he's in 8th grade, so he's getting close to high school. And so it's actually very cool. So I think that just so often he says he's going to call and he doesn't, or he's, doesn't really think about the time or what has to happen. So he was like really on it for this. So I can tell he can do it when he wants to. So it was
Well,
really fun. I was like, wow. Phew. And he had a really good time, so it was good. It was good.
so
I'm glad that can.
can I offer a reframe?
Absolutely.
So, first of all, it's fabulous, and I want to get it, and I don't want to dismiss that. The language I just heard you use was he can do it when he wants to.
Well,
And
I'm aware it's more than that. So it's not really. But when you put enough things in the goodie pile, it's why the goodie pile works. The
well,
incentive.
and that's the reality of it. It's the motivators.
Yeah,
And so it sounds like
exactly.
he had the right motivation in place, and it was his idea, and he wanted to do it. And so it shows that there are tools and things that you can put in place that'll help you to
Right.
figure out, the formula for making it work in other times.
Exactly. Same thing.
Awesome.
Well, it
And
was fun.
Lana, I see
Thanks for
you.
being here. Hi. How are you? Sorry.
How? Yeah, that's all right. That's all right. We got Laura and Lana. It's a light crowd
Yeah.
tonight. I think either people are running late or it's just a busy night. I know that Elaine's got her fall concert at school tonight, and so that's why I'm doing this group 2 weeks in a row. But I'm excited to be able to be with you guys and see how things went since the last time we talked. So, you want to, Laura, you were starting to talk a little bit about what's going on with your son. How are things going since last? So the last time we got together, you were, just going to pull up my notes here and see what you were focusing in on. You were, you were looking at some of his challenges with executive function and changing the expectations around that. So I'm curious
Yeah,
as
the
to
expectations. Yeah, honestly, when he first said Panera, my thought was, no way. No way. It's not right next door. It's not. And, you know, he really convinced me, and he had the whole plan worked out, like how this is going to work. And so, you know, because in the same way that I want to limit some expectations, I want to push other expectations. And so, you know, trying to not get mad about the little things, the forgotten things, the little things, and to let him get these bigger goals. So that was, you know, very successful for me in my interactions with him. And I think he felt like I trusted him, and that was good, because I often don't feel like I do, because I'm afraid that if I do leave it up to him, he's going to wander off and I'll never see him again. So trying to figure out what my expectations can be now that he's 14 on Monday.
Yeah. Do you mind if we dig a little bit in on that last comment you made about wandering off and disappearing forever?
Yes.
So it's so easy, and I do this with my clients all the time, because it's so easy to kind of go into that worst case scenario place, and we always do, because it's that we want to be prepared. And I don't know kind of how you were raised, but I know I have a lot of clients who were raised by kind of depression era parents who the motto was prepare for the worst, you know, kind of thing. And it's really easy to go to that really terrible place, and it's important to make sure you understand and are realistic. I don't want to profess that being a Pollyanna is what anything that anybody should be. But it's about keeping your fears and your perspectives in check and making sure that it's helpful. Because if it's not, you know, if you're in that fear place and you're not moving, and it's like, oh my gosh, I can't possibly let him go to Panera because he might end up in the hospital, you know, whatever the fear is, then it incapacitates you from making making steps and shifting expectations and challenging him. And so it's, you know, when I'm working with clients and we're coaching around fears like this, you know, I will ask them, what's the worst thing that can happen? And you go there and you say, well, what would you do if that did happen? And it can shift in enough to go, well, you know what, before that even happened, you know what, it could happen, you know, or whatever it is. And so, you know, an example I would give is, well, you know, my son would end up, you know, he'd get in trouble at school, and then all of a sudden he'd end up in prison. So that's a great example, because I have a client who thinks that way. You know, so he's in third grade, he gets in trouble in school, and he ends up in prison. Well, there are a lot of steps between getting in trouble in third grade and ending up in prison, and I have every confidence that somewhere along the way, you know, your skills as a parent are going to kick in, and you're going to do something to shift the energy, to make something happen, to really do corrective action. And so that going from grade, getting in trouble in school to prison may not be the best way to look at it. And so I guess I'm just saying that out loud, because the fear you were just talking about may not be as extreme a difference as that, but it might be something to think about.
Yeah, and, you know, I did think through exactly that same way, because, you know, my first thought was no way. And then he presented it, and I thought, okay, I'm going to think about this, and that's exactly what I thought. Okay, worst case scenario, he's not the right place, but I could always drive up and down until I found him or something. And, you know, it was a success. I mean, I will say that is exactly what my initial thought was. Oh, no. But, you know, he needs to start having some freedom, and so I just have to roll with it. And you're right, he probably wasn't going to get stolen by anybody walking down the road or, you know, wander off somewhere. So it was, but I definitely had to go through that mental process, because my initial thought was, no way, are you kidding? And he was so great at it that it was really rewarding. So I'm glad that I didn't let myself just.
So I've had somebody calling in here real quick. I've got somebody calling in here real quick. I'm wondering if somebody's trying to get on and they can't. Hang on just one second.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Is everybody there?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. I apologize. I was worried that it was another parent that was trying to get on the call on it, because they didn't recognize the phone number. So, but I want to kind of dig in as well. And you know, where you were just talking, Laura, about fears and about preparing. I think my guess is that process helps you to think about what gaps exist right now in terms of, you know, your son's independence.
Yeah.
So if you were worried that he was going to be picked up by somebody, you know, what's the problem solving that you would do to say, I need to build a step here to help my son to have me feel more safe when he's out and about on his own?
My husband said, I feel sorry for the kidnapper because my son is a black belt and he's actually very strong and he actually has a lot of skills. So when I said that to Nate, I'm like, oh, someone's going to pick him up. He's like, he's 14. He's as big as you are. No one's going to just snatch him. And he's pretty strong and he's a good fighter. So he's probably going to be okay. And I was like, oh, good point. So that was just a funny, and my husband could see it, but I had a harder time releasing my mommy.
Well, of course you did. I mean, of course you do. And the spirits are there for good reason, and they help you to process, and they help you to keep your kids safe. And at the same time, you know that there's some point at which it stresses you out more than it's adding value.
Yep.
And that's the key, is noticing and paying attention to when it's stressing you out more than it needs to.
Exactly.
Great.
Yeah, that was my good experience.
So, Lana, what's been going on for you the last couple of weeks?
I think for us it's trying to deal with homework. Gabe actually this week so far has been able to get all of his homework in, so that's been great. And he's doing pretty well, but, a couple of weeks ago I brought up the issue that he wasn't really sticking with his planner and that it seems like he wants to change things up a lot or just not do them. And you had suggested checking in with him about changing up the routine, that maybe he just needed something kind of, you know, variable instead of having to do the same old thing every day. So we got into that. His tutor actually worked with him on it. He wanted to switch to an electronic planner because the kids in high school here are allowed, in his school, are allowed to use their cell phones to, at the end of class, they're allowed to pull them out and put in their information. They have an app for the school. So he's been doing that this week, and, he hasn't missed an assignment, but there's definitely a loosey-goosiness on his part in terms of getting things done. And, you know, we've worked so hard and really been hard on him in terms of doing his work, opening up his schedule, not having a lot of outside activities through the week so that he could have nights of homework, because a lot of times it would take him a long time. But I felt like it also allowed him to find a distractible approach so that he could maybe go online looking up things about a class, and next thing you know, he's looking at something else. So this year we're kind of being different. We're letting him be responsible for his homework. If he doesn't get it in, he has consequences at this school. They have grades we didn't before. So there's a lot of change there where he's being made held accountable. We have a good support system in place. And my husband and I are working hard to, you know, not be in that worst-case scenario, which is so easy to do. I'm like, he's going to fail. And we're trying to help him have more stuff in his life, and he's readily taking it, you know, being part of a theater critic group in his high school and, you know, doing some different things now where he wasn't before. So I'm hoping that a busier life, to some amount of busier life, will help him get his work done so that he can be in these other things, because that was what he really wanted last year, was to be more involved in other things. So, you know, it just seems like it's always trial and error, and hopefully we're on to something.
Yeah, and I guess, last time we talked about brain health a little bit, the thing that's coming to me as you're talking is, is it about helping him to put a system and a structure in place to support an executive dysfunction, or is it about having a clear motivator for him, it's going to inspire him differently than the way he's inspired right now. And I was listening to Laura talk about her son and about how what a great job he did on his own this past week, because he, you know, it was his idea. He really was motivated. He really wanted to do it. The incentive was there. And so for our kids, that motivator is so critical. When you think about your son, what's his motivation for getting the homework done and getting stuff turned in?
Well, you know, he seems to be really happy with getting these grades. It's so new to him, this grade system, that he's when he gets a good grade on a test or, you know, participation points or whatever, he's really, really proud. And it's doing so much for him because he really suffered in the last school, really felt demoralized, felt incompetent. It was really painful for him. So he's having the exact opposite experience now where he's doing better and it's, you know, success is breeding success.
Yeah, and that can make such a difference.
Totally, and I think that's probably one of the most important factors here. And I hadn't really thought about that so much because whenever anyone talks about motivators, I think, okay, let's see, what's the carrot? Okay, well, you can have some computer time after you finish your homework. You know, but so I hadn't really thought about that. But, yeah, he's definitely showing a lot of pride and self-content, and he's happier in his life than he's been in a long time.
Yeah, it's interesting when I, you know, to share a personal story, I think when I talk to my son's teachers, the thing that I highlight more than anything else in his 504 plan is that he responds extraordinarily favorably to praise. And if you can, you know, even if he's, you know, 3 weeks late turning something in, if you say, wow, thanks for getting that into me, it'll make such a difference, and it just shifts completely. And it may be that your child's the same way, and you can find, you know, that a motivator doesn't have to be, you know, a trip to Disney World. It can be simply a smile and a thank you. It just depends on the child and what's really genuinely a motivation for them.
Well, I don't know if it was you or Diane, but talking about, I think your child getting a bad grade on something. This was recent. It was on the forum.
Oh, it was me. So this is Diane. Elaine's the other one. But it was me. Yeah, I was talking about Jacob and getting about celebrating that he only had 2 Fs.
Yeah. Well, that's just it. So he came home and said he got a low grade on his chemistry test, and you know, I used to just, that would make me so like upset, and now I'm just like, okay, I'm in my different system now. It's like he's allowed to stumble, and he's allowed to pick himself up and dust himself off and try again, and I'm not going to have a response here that's, you know, reactionary. And so we talked about, okay, what is it that's going on, and how are you going to work with your teacher to find a way to help yourself? So that's the process we're in right now. We're waiting back to hear from her. But that was so helpful to me to see, like, somebody else model, okay, you don't have to be in a panic state when they come home with a bad grade, you know? We're in this for the long term.
Well, and it's hard to do it. I mean, I think I said that in the forum. It's like this is not something that I've done overnight because, it's been a lot of hard work. I'm very aware that it's a trigger for me. But it's about noticing and being aware and taking the deep breaths before you respond and, you know, having the conversation when you're calm. And, it's the stuff that we talk about a lot. It's about managing the threat cycle and managing those stressors that we all have, because the natural reaction is, oh my gosh, this can't be happening, I've got to fix it. Mm-hmm. And that is a completely normal response, and at the same time that may not be the most effective long-term response.
Yeah, and that's my nature. But it was, you know, going back to what Laura had mentioned, you know, with her son, I mean, it's kind of, you fight that kind of catastrophizing part of the self. And I'm wondering, I'm asking you, do you think that because our kids have ADD and have these differences that we're feeling a little more scared about our kids than, like, if I compare my kid to some normal kid, of course I'm idealizing it, but it seems like it's easy for me to be more concerned about him because I think, oh, you know, what if he fails because of his ADD? What if he doesn't, you know, finish high school properly, doesn't get into a good college, whatever it is at the moment that a parent can be really worried about. Do you think it's more prevalent in the ADD community for parents?
Well, I mean, I think the reality is that our kids do stumble a lot. And so, you know, I think we've talked before, and we'll, you know, we talk a little bit today as we talk about positive parenting, but they get to be wrong a lot of time. And so it's harder. What you focus on grows is a philosophy that I've heard and that I adhere to. And so I think that for us, since there's a lot of stuff that's not so great going on, it makes it easier to focus on that. And when we focus on it, it makes it easy to worry. And so it ends up being this kind of exaggerated is the wrong word, because there is probably much more fear. The statistics would say that, you know, kids with ADHD are more likely to end up in prison. They're more likely to end up, you know, all those statistics that we don't want to listen to but are real. So there's some real fear, and then there's this, you know, exaggerated fear because we're surrounded by, you know, mistakes and challenges. And then the other thing I would say is that, and let me kind of, can I divert a little bit, because I want to talk a little bit about stress and about the threat cycle, because I think that as we talk about positive parenting, which is the topic today, one of the things that I know gets in the way a lot for parents in terms of being able to be more positive in their parenting is that they're reacting. You know, it's like my first gut reaction is not, oh, great, you'll do a good job next time, don't worry about it. It's, what? I can't believe this happened again. You know, so it's about managing yourself and about knowing that threat reaction is a natural reaction. And whenever we see something that neurologically we see as a threat, whether it's a mountain lion chasing us, or whether it's you know, a late grade, or you know, a bad grade for your kid, or if it's at work, if it's a deadline that you're about to miss, or a big stack of stuff on your to-do list. I mean, anything that's a threat, there's this automatic biological thing that happens, and you release the hormones, and it gives you energy, and it's there to help you. It's adrenaline, and it's there to help you move and act and get stuff done. But it's not something that you can technically control because it happens so automatically. And I think what happens is that as parents and as individuals when you're tired, when you're hungry, when you're worn out, which most of us are really kind of tired and worn out and overwhelmed a lot of the time, it makes it easier to end up seeing something as a threat. And I think about, you know, have you ever heard the phrase about somebody pushing your buttons? Well, when you get tired and you get overwhelmed, that button gets to be ginormous. So it's really super easy to press your buttons. And so I think, to go back to your question, that what happens is that we get overwhelmed as parents of kids with ADHD. We are dealing with a lot of things that are not always the positive thing. And so we get into that threat cycle a lot more. And so it is harder to be positive, and it's easier to worry. So that was a long answer to a short question, but did that kind of address what you were going at?
Absolutely. I mean, I can totally envision that cycle right in my own family.
Yeah. And so the important thing in terms of understanding that cycle is a couple things. One is noticing what your triggers are. And so if you know, like I know that grade thing is a trigger for me. And so I make sure that I don't look on the parent portal when I'm tired. And when I'm stressed out. In fact, we have a thing in my house that Jacob looks at the parent portal and he prints stuff out, and he's the one who tells me what's missing and what the grades are, because if I see it myself, I kind of, you know, it's much more of a trigger than if I hear it from him, because if it comes out of his mouth, then it's got this buffer, because I'm not going to freak out on him as much as I will on my computer screen, I guess. So it's about knowing your threats. And then it's about noticing once you do get triggered, to stop the cycle. And so that, there's a couple tricks here, and it's really, it's more of a biological sort of thing. So it's about taking a few deep breaths. It's about taking a few sips of water. I love this one because the response, the threat response, is an animalistic one. It's the fight or flight thing that everybody, every primate, every whatever else does. And so that animal in your body is like, I gotta fight, I gotta run, I gotta, you know, I gotta hide. And so if you take a sip of water, then the animal in your brain goes, oh, I'm at a watering hole. The threat must have passed. And it's this really very real biological, neurological thing that happens when you drink water. It calms you down physically. And so I, you know, I always encourage my clients when they've got a real stressful afternoon, carry a water bottle around with them, because then you'll have the, you know, the ammunition you need that when you get threatened, you get triggered, your button gets pushed, you can take a drink of water, you can calm down a little bit so that you're acting instead of reacting.
I'm going to buy a 12-pack of water and keep it in my car.
Great idea.
Up from school, because that's always our biggest time. I'm just getting back from school. He's just getting off school. He's hungry. I'm hungry. It's never pretty. I do my best to not talk much in the car ride on the way home. It keeps us both from fighting, because he's crabby, I'm crabby. But I'm going to bring water because I think that will be helpful.
And I think
that seriously, I'm going to keep it right there.
Well, and it's great that you recognize it. And I'm thinking back on our conversation last time about brain health. And the other thing that I know some clients do is they keep food in their car, because when they get, you know, in the car, their kids are starving, they're hungry, and even getting, you know, eating some power bars on the way home, or eating, I don't know whether your kids eat more pretzel-y kinds of things or they eat more power bar kinds of things, but, you know, having something to feed the brain when you start getting tired like that can be another thing that can be very helpful in those situations.
Yeah, we're still working on that, because we keep trying to get him to do something, but then we get things in the car and then he won't eat it because he doesn't want it. So then I have to drink my water again, because now I have a box of the things that he picked and he won't eat them and he's still crabby. So then I'll just take a sip of
water. So he picks them and he doesn't want them after he picked them. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that sounds familiar. Because
I'll say exactly that, like, okay, so what can we have so you can eat right away? You can have a snack in the car on the way home, and then we pick something, and then I don't want that. I don't feel like that. So
yeah.
I'll just drink my water, and we'll sit quietly on the way home.
Well, it sounds like you've got a good solution that you're going to try to tackle in the next couple of weeks.
I have started already, because I'm aware that that's a trigger point in our relationship. And so, you know, he's irritable, and I'm more likely to get snappish at his little snide comments. But, you know, he's a kid, and he's hungry, and he's tired, and he's had a long day, and it's harder for him to sit still than everybody else and to pay attention, to focus, and to write everything down. And so I just thought, there's, you know, just trying to do the happy way didn't help, because he was just as snarky, and then I got just as irritable. So it's better if we're just quiet. We just listen to music.
Great solution.
It's better for both of us.
So I'm going to jump into... I'm sorry, Laura. I'm going to jump into our topic for this week. But before we do, if you both can just take a minute and figure out what you're going to take aim on. So each week, and I don't know that I did this last time, but it's you know, if we think about the parenting action model, the first step is to take aim. So it's about looking at one particular challenge that you're facing right now and saying, I'm going to focus in on that. And tonight we're going to talk about parenting positively. And so you may have already read the section in the workbook. As you're thinking about what challenge area, just think about one that you think that you imagine that parenting positively might be supportive of, and start with your taking aim. So, if you both would share what you're going to take aim on, that would be awesome.
I think this might be good for me to do with. So it's back to the homework process. You know, I'm kind of the parent that's around that, you know, I'll check in and say, are you working on your homework? And I read the using humor, which we love to laugh in our family, so I can do that. It's just that I do notice sometimes I feel like I'm not trusting him that he's actually getting his work done. Like if he starts to take a while, I think, oh, he might be off doing something else. So, meaning off on another website or looking at a game or something. So I guess I'm trying to figure out if I can use that as taking aim, that somehow I feel like I either have to let it go and just let him get his work done however he's getting it done, because that's the goal. And I sometimes like say things to him that are kind of light, but they also kind of show that I'm not trusting him, which I think is not good.
And it's hard because you want to make sure that you're sending the message that you're taking things seriously and that trust is something that's earned, but at the same time you don't want it to be a challenge all the time for him.
Right.
And I had to laugh when you said that, because I'm sitting here in my office with the door closed and my 14-year-old is in there supposedly doing his homework, and I'm having exactly the same thoughts as you're saying that and going, yeah, I wonder what website he's on right now.
Yeah.
Does it happen?
I was thinking, when do you, though? I mean, any kid, my students in the classroom, my son at the computer, I try to give him as much space as possible to do his homework, because that's what he likes, and I try to respect that. Except when he's sitting next to the window and I can see that Minecraft is what's up on his computer screen and not the paper he's supposed to be typing. I'm like, okay, see? So I go back and forth because I'm really trying to be trusting. And then I come
So maybe we want to take aim on computer games during homework. Maybe it sounds like all three of us might want to take aim on that one tonight.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. Okay. So one of the things, Ma, I think you just said that I think is important is the celebrating the process and not or the outcome. You know, the process. Sometimes it's about creating the steps towards the end point, and sometimes it's about celebrating the end point. So it's like, it doesn't really matter how he gets there as long as he gets there. And if he doesn't get there, it's about celebrating what he was able to do while he was on his way there. Does that make sense? Because you got to manage both of those. But I think that you're right on to think about the fact that sometimes it's not about how he gets it done. And I know in our house we've had several conversations about music while homework's going on, and both of my kids actually do much better with some kind of background noise. My son likes actual music. My daughter does better with white noise, but not with like singing, because she'll not with vocals because she'll sing. You know, so it just depends on the kid and whether it's a distraction for them. But it's about understanding and supporting them in terms of what's best for them in their learning styles. So I'm going to jump in a little bit on parenting positively, and it sounds like you guys have both had a chance to look at the workbook, but this is really about keeping the focus on yourself, your child, and the relationship with each other. And so it's a little bit more about letting go of the details and being able to say, what does my child need right now, and how can I positively support my child? And so, sometimes it's about ignoring the fact that the homework didn't get done or the chore that didn't get done, but it's really about helping your child feel confident, connected, and loved. And I think somebody said it earlier, we're in this for the long haul, and sometimes we don't see the forest for the trees because we're so focused in on, oh my gosh, you didn't get your homework done tonight, and we're not looking at what would be in the long haul most self-confidence building, much support, what supports and support giving. And so it's about looking beyond that and really saying, what is it that I can do that will support my child in this moment? And I talked about this earlier about some of the things that get in the way of positivity, and it's our threat cycle. Or it's our kids' threat cycle. A lot of times our kids get really negative about things that happen. And negativity tends to breed more negativity. And so the other thing we have to look for is the balance between things that are broken, things that need to be corrected, and things that are positive. And I was listening the other day to someone, and they were talking about the ratio of praise to correction. And that, a normal ratio would be 3 praises to every 1 correction. But then to build a healthy relationship, you really need that to be more like a 5-to-1 ratio. And so that for every 1 time you correct your child, you need to say 5 positive things to support them. And that can be really tough to do. because our kids are constantly in the muck and making mistakes and screwing up. And so it's easy to focus on that other thing. But it's an important piece to make sure that that balance makes sense and feels good. And positivity helps really change the energy in the relationship. I mean, the reality is that if you're focused on things that are good, even if it's a small thing that's good, even if it's a small success, it gives you the energy than it does if you focus on stuff that's broken all the time. So it gives you more motivation, and it helps you to be more positive moving forward. It helps you to be more successful, helps your kid to be more successful in the long run. So I talked about the three or 5-to-1 ratio. The other thing I think that in positivity, we talk a lot about humor, and there's a note in here about humor being a tool in positive parenting. I think that humor is fabulous for a couple of reasons. One is that it really can make a difference in terms of shifting the energy. I like always laugh. That's one of my. I'm not a comedian. Elaine's house is a lot funnier than my house, I think. But I still remember my son losing it, and he went upstairs and he slammed his door and he locked the door. And we have a house rule about locking the doors. And when I came upstairs and I'm like, son, you need to open your door. It can't be locked. And he's like, he didn't say anything. The door's locked. And I said, son, if you don't open the door, I'm going to have to use coaching tip number 432 on you. And he just burst out laughing because my kids are always teasing me because I'm always trying to coach them and they don't want me to coach them. But it's just something subtle like that just breaks the energy and shifts it a little bit. Whether it's a tickle fight, and you know, it says here to be real careful about using sarcasm or snarky humor, but the reality is that sometimes you can't get to positive, and you might be able to get to snarky or sarcastic or funny, which could be a good bridge to getting to positive. You know, so it's sometimes if our energy is focused on what's broken, if we can make a joke about it, then it can get us to a more positive place. So when I talk about positive parenting, what comes up for you guys?
I think I've heard that 5 good for every 1 bad, because that's a teaching thing too. And I think that's harder than heck to use in my own house, which is really unfortunate for me. I have to do that. But we do do a lot. We do a lot of humor, but we're very sarcastic, all of us, my husband, my son, myself. So sometimes our humor does go more sarcastic. So I saw that in the writing, or in the booklet, whatever we call it, about less sarcasm. But if that's the way that your family deals with humor, is that more acceptable or still not acceptable?
Well, I think you've got to figure out what works for you guys. I mean, I think that's the piece that really is what feels good in your family. And, you know, I think that there are kids that tolerate sarcasm. There are parents that tolerate sarcasm. And I think that it's about noticing how everybody reacts to it. And sometimes it becomes a family culture and everybody's okay with it. And sometimes they're not. Or sometimes you have an outsider come in, like a grandma or a grandpa, and they're like, oh my gosh, did he really just say that to you? Yeah, exactly. Right. So I think that, you know, every family's got to figure out what their rules and their boundaries are. And I think that that's the thing I would encourage is if you have a house rule, you know, so it's kind of like if somebody's feelings get hurt, maybe you have a house rule about being honest if your feelings are hurt and honoring when somebody's feelings get hurt. So you have a code word or a rule or something that says, if my feelings were hurt, I'm going to say something and I'm going to raise my hand or I'm going to do, you know, tweak my ear or whatever it is so that everybody knows, wow, I crossed the line here.
Good idea.
And you were talking about the 3-to-1 or the 5-to-1 and how it works in education as well. We talked about this a little bit on Tuesday. One of the things that can be really helpful is that if you do correct your child, and then they are compliant, so it's kind of like if they forget to, we just finished dinner, if they forget to take their plate to the dishwasher and you remind them to take their plate to the dishwasher, the minute they do it, you say thank you for doing that. You know, you immediately, when they comply, you say thank you for doing it, or you say thank you for listening so attentive to me while I explain to you what you need to do. You know, so it's finding those small things to be appreciative of, to be positive about.
Mm-hmm.
Lana, what about for you? What came up as we were talking about parenting positively?
Well, that last thing you just said, I was like, oh, good, because when I thought about five praises, I thought, how will I notice? And then I realized as you were saying it, I do thank him a lot. Like after I remind him to do something and he does it, I say thanks. Or, you know, thank you for doing that, or I'm glad you did that, or, you know, little things like that. And then I realized that it's really kind of slowing myself down and paying more attention to what it is that he's doing. And, like, to be cognizant of the fact that when, you know, sometimes I get caught up and I have to remind him several times to do something. But if I'm cognizant of the fact that when he does go ahead and do it, or if he remembers to do it on his own, that's really worthy of praise, because he's kind of picking himself out of, you know, his normal experience and going and doing something, if that makes sense. It's like
because he's going above and beyond, because he's shifting from the direction he was headed. He stopped and he's moving into the direction that you've asked him to move into.
Right. So that's really big. And I think for me, sarcasm, we use that in our house, and it's hit or miss. I mean, my husband comes from a place where, you know, using it frequently with his family, like, it works. But it's more I'd rather be on the listening end and laughing than trying it myself, because I think when I do it, sometimes there's kind of like something behind it. You know, like, I'm pissed off at my son, so I'll say something in a sarcastic way rather than being honest about what I'm angry about. Because I haven't decided, do I want to share this or do I want to let it go, you know?
And that's a really good point. And I think that's why this note is in here about humor, is that you need to be really careful about using humor as a way to mask honesty. Or using sarcasm specifically as a way to mask honesty versus making a joke about something and laughing about something and remembering Elaine's blog about her son slithering down the stairs and making a joke about the snake coming in to put his dishes away or something. You know, it's just little silly stuff like that where you're laughing, or using a tickle fight to break the energy, or, making up a silly song or something like that, that can be just a lighter way to approach a challenging situation. But I think you're right on to say, I've got to be careful when I'm being sarcastic instead of just being straightforward and honest.
Right.
So when do you see that it gets really hard for you to be honest?
I think some of the times it's the small stuff, actually, because I don't know, like, I have to, sometimes it's, like, I'm working with this in a bigger area of my life, just kind of in general. I'm looking to be more connected to what I'm feeling in the moment and how I'm going to share that with my family members and or not. And so I think part of it is, as a parent, it's like, well, do I really need to chastise him for that, or can I let it go? So there's a moment of delay where I'm trying to sort it out, or I might be just tired and I don't feel like dealing with that delay, and so I'll just kind of say something, so I'm a little pissed off that it didn't get done, you know, and so it comes out in the way I communicate it, because I'm not really clear, I think, what's happening. I'm not clear enough to really deal with it, but I feel like if I let it go, then I'm not dealing with it. And, you know, it's just kind of a confused moment, really, I think, for myself.
So what do you think you could do to honor your truth but not make a big deal out of it?
That's a great question. Well, see, that's where I get stuck, because I don't know if I let it go and honor my truth later after I've had time to think about it, which I've done. I've waited and sorted it out later on my own and then gone back and said, you know, something happened earlier today and I really just want to talk to you. And I'm usually really calm at that point because I've had plenty of time to think about it. I guess that's one way that I would be able to honor my truth.
Great. So when you notice that something's bugging you later, you go back and you make sure you say it if you let it go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Can I share something else?
Yes, please.
So someone told me once that it's about speaking your truth and then letting go of the outcome. And so you're letting go of, you know, so if I'm telling you something because it's important to me to share this with you, it's different than I'm telling you this so that you do something, right? Because I can't make anybody else do anything, actually. So you say what you need to say, and then you let go of it. And then the other thing that kind of comes to mind as you're talking is, you know, I'm trying to remember the phrase, is it true, is it kind, is it, I don't even, do you remember, if I'm saying that, does that ring a bell with either of you?
No.
Hang on a second, there's a thing, it's like, it don't, if it's not true, is it kind, oh, there we go, is it true, is it kind, is it necessary? I love Pinterest. You know, before you speak, ask yourself, is it true? Is it necessary? Is it kind? And it's make sure that if those three things are not fact, then maybe it's not to be spoken.
That's a great rule of thumb.
So the other thing, since I'm sitting here, because I Googled this a few minutes ago, there's another resource that I would recommend to folks. It's 100 Ways to Praise Your Child. You guys have seen that, but I've got the post-it of it on my mirror in my bathroom. But it's just kind of, you know, it's a great reminder that it's not always saying thank you, it's not always saying good job, but it's, you know, just kind of coming up with different creative ways to let your kids know that you're grateful for them and that you and to praise them.
I have two of those in my classroom and none of them in my house.
Well, I'm glad that I was able to remind you of that.
I do. I think that's, I literally do have two of them. They're magnets. They're big, huge magnets around my filing cabinets, and I do think of them often at school to get my right number of benefits, and then I just don't think that way when I come home. It's really unfortunate for me.
So what do you think is different for you?
I think I definitely have higher expectations for my own kid than I do for other people's special education students. I don't know why, and that's been a big part of my changing my expectations. And why do I hold Zachary to such a high standard when I don't hold my students to the same thing? I say, okay, you know what? They're likely to forget their homework. They're likely to not be on top of it. They're likely to not do this. And so I build into my classroom for every class things to cover that. And, you know, I think it's harder because Zachary's not in a special education environment where people are accommodating for him. And so I feel like it has to be me. And so I probably, you know, and it's, I don't know. I think I just, I get in the moment and I just expect too much from him more. And then it's unfortunate. And so, you know, with me trying to pick my time for conversations, I'm excited to see him at the end of the day. I'm like, oh, it's so nice to see my own child. And then he's like horrible to me. And I'm like, ah, I hate you. I can't tell. Okay, I hate you. But, you know, in that moment, I'm like, we're just both better not to talk then. And I think when I think about homework and things like that, I have to step back and think, I don't think about my students this way. So why am I thinking about him this way? Like, you got to do it all. You got to be on it. You have to. And probably because I feel like, okay, I should know. I probably hold myself to a higher standard than I hold the other parents to. And
so,
you know,
so. If Zach did, but the other kids couldn't, what's different for Zach?
Because I'm here and I know, and somehow it should be I don't know. I don't know. It's a really good point. And I feel like in a lot of ways I make a lot of exceptions, and in a lot of other ways I really don't. I mean, I make exceptions with remembering to do the dishwasher and bringing this stuff upstairs and things like that. But I have a much harder time when it comes to school and homework and behavior and stuff like that. I get really, I probably feel more hardcore about it because I'm a teacher and I know what teachers have to go through to try to keep everybody in order and to keep everybody, you know, learning things and on top of it. And so if I feel like he's not, I don't know. If I feel like he's making trouble for the teachers, I feel more frustrated. Or if he's not turning things in, I guess I feel like it looks back on me and like I should be able to do this. And not even necessarily that someone else is thinking you should be able to do this, but because I'm thinking I should be able to do this. Hello, this is what I do for a living. How can I manage other people's kids if I can't manage my own kids? And that's
so
unfortunate.
So you're holding, yeah. So here's the good news. I mean, I know you are doing great things to help your son manage his ADHD. I also know you're doing things for yourself to support yourself, and that's why you're here, is to you know, increase your, you know, your skills, your support for him. And Zach has ADHD.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm kind of hearing two things. I'm hearing that it says something about you, like there's some judgment of you if he doesn't behave a certain way. But at the same time, I know that you know that there's this concept of taking a disability perspective, that it's not like Zach could just suddenly wake up tomorrow morning and do things differently.
Exactly. And somehow I feel like I've told him 100 times, so he should know. Even though I know it doesn't matter that I've told him 100 times, he's not necessarily going to be able to make those connections. You know, I've tried to really ease off in the morning, and it's probably myself, but it's probably also because I'm looking at my youngest brother, who's 31, and he's really struggling to manage his life. And, you know, he's right now living in my parents' summer cabin. And because, you know, he quit his job so that he could come and go to this school thing, and then he quit it right away. And he's just for 10 years lived, you know, by the skin on his teeth, just barely keeping things together. And my uncle, my little brother's predecessor, spent time in jail and has spent his entire life like just kind of roaming around and not being able to fit into any place or keep relationships. And somehow I feel like I can make it better for Zachary, and I'm trying really hard. And so every time it seems like it's not working, I'm probably double, because I don't really think that any of those teachers at school, because until 2 weeks ago they didn't even know he had ADHD. So, you know, it's new that they even know about it. But I'm definitely probably my own hardest critic, because somehow I feel like I should have the answers, and when I don't, and when I can't control my own frustration with him, and when he says something and I'm just, you're so rude. I don't appreciate
well,
that.
And this is the thing. I mean, it makes perfect sense that you would feel this way. One is you're a professional, and, you know, you do work with these kids, and so that there's part of you that feels like, well, I can do it all day long with somebody else's kid. Why can't I do it with mine? Well, the reality is the stakes are higher. It's your kid, and
yeah. You're
more at ease, and you're tired, and it's the end of the day, whatever it is. I mean, there's plenty of logical reasons that it's more difficult to do it with your own kid. And the reality is that there's more at stake because it's scarier.
Yeah, probably. Definitely.
Because it's your kid.
Definitely.
And so, but I have every confidence that if you can figure out how to do it to support those kids at school, and you know that
yeah. You're
handling Zach differently, I have every confidence that you'll be able to figure out how to shift it for Zachary as well.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's going to be a saving grace for myself too.
Yeah, the thing that kind of comes to mind is taking the disability perspective, and I know that we talked about that. I don't know if you remember back to the back to school webinar, and we talked a little bit about the wheelchair and the kids and the stairs and everything. But you know, maybe go back and think about that a little bit, and you know, what visual, what reminder can you carry around Zachary to say, I know that I can't just, it's not like he, I can just, Elaine was talking about this the other night on some program, but it's like if a kid's sitting at the back of their room and they wear glasses, but they don't have their glasses on, you know, to tell them, just try harder, just try harder to
yeah.
see.
I definitely know. And I mean, I see in myself that I'm doing that. And so I have to set those things. And I know, because I know all the training I've had and all of that stuff. And so I'm definitely treating Zachary differently and expecting more from him than I probably should. But I'm still struggling with where do I stop expecting and where do I start? Although, just as a good note on Zachary's behalf, when I heard Lana, when I heard you say a couple minutes ago that your son was trying to take more initiative in his own homework and things like that, I feel like Zachary's done that a lot. And on Wednesday when I got an email from his teacher saying he was missing a math assignment, instead of me getting all mad and saying, Zachary, it's another assignment. What have I told you about this? I just said, I got an email. I wanted to show it to you. And he said, you know, he read the email and he said, okay, thanks. I'll talk to her about it and see what I missed. And I said, okay, sounds good.
Wow.
So that was like, I think that was the first time that I really, you know, just as I'm trying to set these expectations, I was like, okay. I was calm about it. I was, you know, granted I had just gone into the church and found him off in a corner with his friends while I was sitting outside waiting for 15 minutes after his Bible study or his youth group time. And I'm like, I had been waiting for 15 minutes. And I walked away after I'd said, could you please be watching for me so I don't have to sit there because it's going to be 9 o'clock at night. So, you know, my bad side was I snipped at him for that. But the good side was then I showed him nicely his lack of homework. And he said, okay, I'll look at it. So, you
awesome.
Know.
Awesome.
I thought he did a nice job taking responsibility for that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we're getting close to time, and I want to take us to our close. We can. So in the workbook on page 13 are the four questions we always answer at the end of the call. I want to take a minute and talk about, write down, you know, what did you learn or get clear about today? How can you apply it to your life right now? What's a realistic action step for you to take? And what do you need to do to set yourself up for success? And then I'll ask Lana, when you're done, to just kind of share a little bit about what you've written.
I'm ready.
Okay.
Okay. So, you know, as I look at what we've gone over tonight that was helpful to me, I took notes, and I think there are a number of things I could actually look at, but it seems like the speaking the truth piece, even though, you know, it came up toward the end, I really think that that, for me, is kind of underlying these things. For instance, when we first started about taking aim on the computer games issue during homework, that being able to speak my truth is, you know, I want to kind of explore that this week and think about what exactly I'm concerned with. Is there any way that I can talk about it with him where I'm not undermining trust? Because what if he is doing his homework because he's got ADD? It's taking him a long time. So if I come in and accuse him of playing on a game rather than acknowledging that it's taking him longer to do his homework, then I'm undermining the trust between us. So I'd rather kind of pick a, you know, zero in on this week and look at how can I approach him and just a little bit. So feeling the truth inside of me that it's a concern for me. Maybe I'm on to something and maybe I'm not in terms of maybe he is playing games. So I don't know if I'm being clear, but right. So I'm going to look at that. So my next step would be to analyze how I'm feeling, kind of type that out for myself, have a conversation with him about it, and then trust that I've resolved it enough and kind of step back and let it flow. And I think in order to have success with that, I'm definitely going to talk to my husband about it and make sure that we're kind of on the same page about this, because I know we're both dealing with this. So.
Awesome. Well, so how do you feel about that as a next step for you?
The next step is definitely having a little quiet time with myself and thinking it through, and then the next step would be talking to my husband so that I know what I'm really feeling and thinking, you know, have clarity around it, then discuss it with him, get his clarity on it, and then figure out how we're going to talk to Gabe. So.
Great. Well, I look forward to, you know, if you're comfortable, post something out on Facebook and let us know how it goes.
Okay.
Laura, what about you? Are you there?
Okay, can you hear me?
Sorry.
I can.
Nope.
Did you put it on?
Sorry. I thought I'd unmuted it, and then I turned. Okay. I was just going to say that I think that one of the things that I still have to come to terms with is my expectations. And the more I say out loud, the more I realize that I, you know, I have different realizations about him than I do about my own students. And I probably need to be able to stand back and think about him as if I was his teacher instead of his mom. And what would I recommend to his parent, or what would I do? And so I think that's what I'm going to try to do. And that time after school and the initial starting of homework and things like that, I mean, I'm just going to keep that in my mind to just, you know, keep trying what I'm doing, put my bottle of water in the car so that, you know, we don't talk about anything major in the car on the way home. And then that I just set realistic expectations and that I am not expecting more from him than I would from any of my students.
So
what
are you going to do to help yourself to remember that?
I wrote it down, and
okay.
I think I should probably bring my 100 ways to compliment your kid magnet home, because I probably don't need two of them at school. I could probably put one in the guest room where I get dressed in the morning, because I wake up an hour before the boys, so I keep all my stuff over here. And maybe just as a reminder to myself that, you know, if I have to say it to them, I have to say it to my own child, because he's way more important to me than they are. And they are very important to me. So he's exponentially so. And I think that that's, you know, not just that I hold myself at a higher standard of expectations, but that I'm realistic, that I'm still a parent with a child who has ADHD. He's not just like everybody else necessarily. And no matter how high his IQ tests are, it doesn't really come down to anything if, you know, I'm not giving him the same benefit that I would give to any of my kids, students.
Yeah. So, and just kind of a parting thought, you know, if this is about you more than it's about him, which is my kid should, you know, and everything, I mean, I'm a firm believer that everything in our realm of experience is about us, ultimately. It's not about our kids. Then, you know, be gentle with yourself, because it's normal to hold the bar high. It's normal to have a high standard for yourself. It's normal to have a high standard for your kid. And it's part of what has allowed you to be as successful as you are at this point in your life. So be gentle with yourself, but also try to understand what's going on behind it and what's really the message that you're hearing. Is it, you know, you're a terrible person if your kid isn't completely successful? Is it, you know, I failed as a mom, is it, you know, whatever the message is. And just know that it's a normal response, and be gentle with yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I'm going to take a little time, like Lana said, and just, like, think in my mind and spend some one-on-one time with myself to kind of, you know, get it all in order and, you know, make a little plan. So, you know, get clear on my thinking.
Awesome. Well, thank you, ladies, for both being here, and thank you for everybody who's listening on the recording. And our next call is in 2 weeks on Thursday the 7th, Thursday the 7th. And actually, Elaine and I will be in D.C. that night, so she'll be calling from the CHAD conference. I don't know if anybody else is going to the CHAD conference, but we will be there 2 weeks from tonight.
Thank you.
Excellent.
Great. Thanks, ladies.
Thanks.
Good night.